Support for Small Joys comes from the Columbus Foundation, celebrating the creativity that inspires and strengthens the Central Ohio community every day. More at columbusfoundation.org. Support also comes from the Greater Columbus Arts Council's Columbus Makes Art.
WSU Public Media, this is Small Joys. I'm Hanif Abdurraqib, and today my guest is Avishar Barua. Avishar is a chef and restaurant owner who grew up in Central Ohio. He originally planned on becoming a doctor and studied pre-med, but his love of cooking drew him into professional kitchens. After honing his culinary skills at restaurants locally and in New York, he landed a position as executive chef and general manager of Service Bar in Columbus. And that's where TV producers took notice and invited him to apply for a spot on the cooking competition show Top Chef. He appeared on the show, and though he wasn't victorious, he's seen enormous success back here at home. In the past year, he's opened two restaurants: Joyous Cafe, which features Bengali American fare inspired by his family heritage, and Agni, which just opened and specializes in food cooked over a wood fire grill. Though Avishar is passionate about gourmet food, we began our conversation by talking about his love of Taco Bell. Yeah, well, what's your Taco Bell order?
I'm getting a little bit older, so it's not as big as it used to be. I used to get two chili cheese burritos, two cheesy gordita crunches with Doritos Locos shells, and two tostadas. But now it's one of each, and since the tostada's gone, I'll just try like a crunchy taco, or if they have something new, I'll give it a shot. You know, I have to do the R&D.
Yeah. I haven't been to Taco Bell. I mean, I felt like when fast food was out the window for me, Taco Bell was kind of like the first of the franchises to go out the window.
Yeah, for
it was
sure.
The one that I just knew I could not live with. But I'm happy that you're still indulging for the both of us, I suppose.
Yeah, I try to cut it down. It's just only on every now and then, not as much as I used to.
Yeah. So I read that you studied science, or that you were, at least in college, science was kind of the initial path that you took. Was there a point wherein science led you to food, or was it just kind of like, I'm tired of doing science? And what, you were in biology, yeah?
Correct. Biology and psychology. So one physical, one social.
Okay. Yeah, it was, that's impressive.
It was difficult for sure.
Yeah, was the point kind of just that you were, you just hit a point where you were kind of fed up or exhausted with the sciences and moved to food, or how did food enter kind of your career path?
I mean, to be honest, I think everything is a learning experience. So I don't think either of my degrees were wasted. If anything, they were kind of enhanced by what I saw in two different fields of science. Was we overlapped the scientific method, and it was a good thing because it was always questioning why we do stuff. And food is—it used to be. I mean, in traditional kitchens, you don't ask questions; you just do. And I found it very hard to just do. I had to kind of like learn why. And the science definitely helped because I would be able to test kind of hypotheses, so to speak, like, well, why is this working? Or is this working because of a chance or because I can do this? And doing it that way made it easier to educate others and also maintain consistent results. Because ultimately, like when we're at a restaurant, we have a various number of guests, but we want to provide them the same experience. So consistency is key.
You are opening, or you have opened one restaurant, and you're currently in the process of opening another. And the food is going to be kind of centered around like a kind of Midwestern barbecue vibe. Although, you know, that I feel like even is kind of broad, you know. Then again, I suppose I'm not the best person to even identify what a Midwest barbecue is like. That's just not something even though I'm a very much a Midwesterner, it's not something that I'm always having access to. So what kind of things are you playing around with on the menu?
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, intentionally, it was designed to be vague in that regard, because, you know, I'm Bengali American. Bangladesh, you know, was a country that was fairly recently founded. My parents left Bangladesh and came to America, and I was born in Columbus, Ohio. And then I grew up liking Chinese food, studying, you know, medicine, and kind of eating around Columbus in different locations. So I don't know if that makes me any less Midwestern, any more Midwestern, but it was kind of a product of my life. So part of it's like, you know, what is my identity? And then part of it's being okay with saying, hey, I don't have to commit to saying I'm only going to do like grilled steaks or something. It can be like if you come to my parents' house, for a barbecue, and we're in the Midwest, it's, you know, like tandoori chicken or something. Like, it's, we have a grilled chicken recipe. My brother's making kebabs. If I went to my friend's house, he might be like, you know, Sichuan, and he could be having like grilled meats, like lamb skewers with, you know, like a different spice blend. But that's also in Ohio. So I think of all of those more of like the moments and the sharing of the experience with a friend as Midwestern barbecue, because it could be anything to anyone. I think it can get difficult when you pigeonhole and say, well, it's going to have to be like a burger. Like, that's tough for me because I didn't always grow up eating burgers. My memories are a little bit different than others. So I just kind of wanted to share the experiences that we went through that kind of gathered around fires.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Top Chef, you know, we see the finished product of a show like Top Chef, or we watch the end results, but we don't always see what goes on behind the scenes. And we definitely don't know, those of us who've never been on it, don't know what it takes to get there. And so my first question on that journey is, what kind of compelled you to try to get on the show, and how does one get on that show?
To be completely honest, I didn't try for the show. I had didn't think I'd ever qualify or be someone that would ever, like, so thus I never gave it a shot or tried to build my career around trying to get on TV. They actually reached out to me, and I honestly thought it was a practical joke played by somebody or something, and it was just like going to be a prank, until I ended up in Portland and they started filming, and I was like, oh, this is actually happening. So it was I'm just as in disbelief as kind of anyone else around me. I was like, I don't really know how they found me or what their process is. But in the middle of kind of the pandemic, I got an email from a casting agency, and they said that, hey, you know, we think you'd be great on Top Chef. And I was like, I don't really know what that means. I think you may have gotten the wrong person. And then through the course of like several months, they kind of whittled down. Like, I think they start with like 15,000 or something people, and they decide who wants to be on. And they just kind of go through, just like an audition process, they'll kind of pull people out until they end up with the final 15. And somehow I was fortunate enough to get on there.
It's incredible. It was really entertaining, and I think the city was really excited to have you there. But I'm kind of just curious about the behind the scenes of it all. I mean, not that you have to like spill the any salacious details or what have you, but kind of like, how does one arrive at the finished product that we see on the show? And like, how, you know, you live with folks, and you are kind of, it's also a competition. What were your takeaways when it comes to the process of the show actually unfolding behind the scenes?
Yeah, I honestly was very fascinated by how they're able to produce such good TV, because you see it from one side and you go, wow, this is like a fast-paced, high action. What's going on? Is there like, you know, and some of the simple questions that some might have is, so when we work in restaurants, we use recipes. So are you allowed to bring your recipes with you? And the answer is no. You have to kind of go off your memory. Like, there's no, like, there's, you know, you lose your kind of your toolbox. You have to go off of everything you have. It is going to be televised, so it has to be entertaining. And they do a very good job at editing. They do a very good job at, you know, getting us in the right mindset to begin with the process every day. But it's very stressful for sure. I've never felt as much anxiety as I did on there. Part of it was that I was the first person from Columbus, Ohio, so I had a lot of pressure to say, hey, I'm representing the Buckeye State. And every day you can kind of get in your own head, because there's breaks between when you're cooking and stuff. And sometimes giving someone more time is not always the best, because then you get a chance to second guess yourself, or, you know, you get in your own head, or it's almost like, you know, like in a football example, they'll like ice the kicker. It's like you can ice a chef, because they don't know if they're going to do the right thing or the wrong thing. Getting over all of that ended up becoming like the most difficult part of it. The cooking was not easy as well, because, you know, the kitchen isn't ideal. You might be in somebody else's kitchen. You might be asked to do this with some restrictions or with some specialty ingredients, or to produce a goal guide basically that isn't something you would make at home, or you wouldn't have your pantry to access. You just kind of have to go off the seat of your pants and adapt as much as you can. So all of those things combined with the fact that we were in the middle of a pandemic, we didn't actually get to like live with each other per se, because we had our own hotel rooms and we were kind of isolated and sequestered off to prevent anyone from getting sick. So all of those, yeah, it was not the most ideal of experiences in terms of being at our mental best, but it was definitely a test for sure.
How did you feel life changed coming back to the city, if it did at all? Like, were there unreasonable expectations on you in terms of time and in terms of people, you know, placing things on you and wanting kind of, I do love Columbus a great deal, I do know how quickly the pressure can mount when you've done something really immense. And so How did you adjust back, or are you still adjusting back?
I think, I mean, for better or worse, it definitely changes you. I don't know if it changes you, but it might bring some things out and puts you in positions that you may have not been used to before. So typically, I'm an introvert for sure. So anytime I get on to do an interview, I have to like kind of recharge my battery for the next 2 days or cry in my room, you know, so figure those things out after. That did not change. So knowing that when I decided to start cooking, it was a career shift for me, and I really had to give up a lot to just like I couldn't just go and flip a burger. When people like say, "Hey, flipping burgers is like an easy thing," and you know, like they kind of look down on it, I look the opposite. As I really wanted to do that. Like I thought it was an exciting thing, and I had to fight to get to the place where you know my family, my culture was accepting of me cooking. So it already had started off with a lot of pressure, and then ending in a place where now I'm on national television when all I really wanted to do is cook. That was a gigantic kind of thing to take on. It almost seemed insurmountable at times. However, you know, I did it for several reasons. The main reason, and that's what keeps it manageable, is like I did it for like I think Columbus is an amazing city, and we need a little bit more recognition for being a cool city. And secondarily, I know that when I made the decision to start cooking, I didn't have like a resource, a Bengali American chef to look up to. I was kind of a kid in Columbus, Ohio that did this, and I had to switch gears, and there was no resources available for me, so I felt alone a lot. So I figured if I did it, if there's another person who is considering, maybe they can change their career path. They saw that I was able to do it, so they could do it too.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the relationship to cooking and how, and since you brought up this is a perfect segue, how you navigated it culturally and within kind of both culture and family. How has that evolved in the years that you now have gone from, you know, having these expectations of what your career path would be in college and then becoming and pursuing and maintaining a life as a successful chef?
And I still, I don't know, I don't classify myself as a successful chef to this day, because I think there's a lot more work to be done. I like the way that this is starting, the way we're going, and that is now being able to be accountable for decision making, I think is a big key difference from like being a chef to becoming a business owner. Is now everything is in my hands, and now I have the ability to, you know, to change people's lives. Should I be able to acquire the resources and make a plan to do it? Initially it was just only about the food. How do I make the best thing possible? How do I express myself through food? How do I repeat these results? How do I bring joy thusly? And now it's more about how can I encourage and inspire others to do it? Because it's very selfish to think that I alone could, you know, change anything. I could bring about the change, or and I might be able to set somebody else for success, but solo, it's not going to be possible. Like we're a big city. We have to build a big community, and you know, like community is one of the things that I've been around for a long time. I've never really felt 100% part of it, but when I started cooking, I realized that it didn't really matter what anyone's background was. We could all like come together and do some awesome stuff, and then share a meal together and enjoy food. And that's one of the things that I try to keep reminding every time we go through another step or some growth. It's always, this is why we're doing it, is because we're actually bringing joy to people. Like, you know, that's the point of it, is we want to bring happiness to hospitality. Like that's it comes at a cost, but the cost is worth it.
When did you notice your love for food expanding? And were there some Columbus restaurants or some Columbus places that kind of helped you along that journey?
Sure. I mean, Columbus is still, there's pockets and restaurants that I'll point out, and it might not be the traditional, like, here's your top 10 Columbus restaurants list. It'll be a lot of, you know, like again, we would visit more, at the time the term was ethnic restaurants. Now it is called restaurants, but it was, you know, we'd go and try and find Somalian cuisine. We'd go and find Vietnamese food. We'd get Chinese food. That was easier for us because the community seemed similar and they were always excited to spread food, and we didn't feel unwelcome or intimidated by menus. We could just be ourselves and order the food we wanted to, and oftentimes we would have more than four people to feed, so it was also affordable. So going there and experiencing those things, I didn't think that there would be anything to it. When I started cooking, it was very much in the direction of French first. Like if you don't get your foundation in French cuisine, then there's no point in even trying to pursue it. And I always had I wouldn't say I'd have a problem with it, but I think it's kind of a very narrow claim to make, considering that, you know, the history of China is exceeding much, much more of the history of France and even India. Like, how much culinary heritage? I mean, what was the point of even Columbus setting sail towards India to get spices? Like, this is based around food. So there's a lot of stuff going on in the past that I think has been underexplored, and it's awesome to be a part of some of that and see, like, you know, we're always kind of the underdogs. We don't always necessarily have to use heavy cream to make stocks. There's other ways to introduce flavor. A lot of my friends growing up were very American, you know, like traditional, like, you know, also born in Columbus, Ohio, but came from maybe Anglo-Saxon families. And I was always afraid to share the food that my mom would make. But what we found is initially we'd have pizza parties because my mom's like, she wants me to fit in. So when the friends come, we'll get some pizza. But they would eat her chicken, and it was just like a murgi rajol, a traditional Bengali dish, and it was spicy. But the kids loved it. They would eat with their hands. They'd drink a gallon of milk with it because it was a little on the spicy side. But that was what we ended up eating, is we ended up eating my mom's food. And growing up around it, I never really thought anything of it. But as I got older, I was like, well, there's a lot going on here that is, and it comes from the soul, it comes from the heart, it comes from thousands of years of history, and then a different understanding of flavors.
Yeah, I tend to think about food as a way to chart history and experience, and something that can serve as a teaching tool as well as anything else. And I have been to and really enjoyed when I went the spot you have in Worthington, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is called Joya, right?
Yep, it is called Joya.
Which is interesting. That's the same name as its kind of this chocolate bar that I had when I was a kid that the kosher market in Bexley used to serve. So I was very excited to see that name. And I went and I really loved it. And I loved it as an experience. And like, I think that sometimes a restaurant can be a space of you kind of get in, get what you need and get out. But also it can, if you're lucky, be a dining experience. How have you worked to cultivate that, particularly, you know, in an era where, you know, restaurants have had kind of a fraught existence since 2020, you know, and it's been hard for many of them to survive, and it's been hard for many of them to thrive, and it's been hard for many of them to kind of maintain a space that keeps people happily and comfortably coming in the door. I'm curious about how you've found yourself kind of leaning into slash cultivating the restaurant as experience, place that people want to come, a place that people want to sit for a while. Maybe not fully anxiety free, of course, mm-hmm. but you know, moving past the space of this is the restaurant as a place where you carry out your food and then leave and don't think about it, you know? Mm-hmm.
Firstly, I'm honored and humbled that you thought the experience was like that for you. That's what we strive to do as a group. So just hearing that sort of feedback makes it all worth it for all of us, because, you know, there is a lot of work that goes in the back and a lot of hours that are spent, and sometimes they're very repetitive. But when we hear things like that, it really just empowers us to keep going, because that's all we're looking for. And that came from two things. One is it's called Joya because my mom's name is Joya Sri, actually. So we use the American spelling of her name, which is her nickname, which is Joya, to name it. And when we started kind of, how do we want to treat guests when they walk in the door? I was like, well, what would my mom do? Kind of that was the easiest way to begin. And I believe that, you know, I'm a chef person. I like the getting my hands dirty. I like the technical aspect of food and producing something that someone can put in their mouth, enjoy. You know, they're ingesting something, so they're trusting us immensely to be able to try this product. And it's also carrying years and years of culture with it. That's all great, but it doesn't really mean anything unless you have a person behind it, a nice experience, and you feel welcome. So many times in the past, I've gone into a restaurant and I've really felt like I was a burden more than something that I was like, and sometimes you go to a restaurant because you seek some joy. You've had a rough day, a nice piece of food, some coffee. It could get you in the right mindset. It can clear like the stress of your day. It can be a little escape. It can be a retreat, a place for someone to have a good time. So we just approach it that way, where kind of our rule is if someone walks through that door, unless they've proven otherwise, like, why don't we make them leave a little bit better than when they started? And that can summarize anything in a number of ways, where anyone in the staff is empowered to make that person stay better, whether they're in the front of the house, the back of the house, whether they're doing the dishes. There's always moments that if you pay attention, and a lot of it is like, you know, we listen. We try and listen more than we talk. And the more we listen, the more we learn about our guests. The more we learn about our guests, we learn that they're awesome people. Like, you know, we hear headlines and news about things that are not so great, but that's why they're headlines. The majority of average people they're wanting to do some good. So it's nice to see that every day and interact with so many amazing people. And it just becomes an awesome interaction. And the food is a plus. The drinks are a plus for sure. It's cool that we have kind of an open layout so we can interact with people more and more. And it's nice that I can get, like, we have the kitchen start to run food because we encourage everybody to interact more. We went through a pandemic, and during that time, we realized how important it was to see others, to talk to others. It's a treasure that we don't want to lose again, so we want to definitely highlight as much as possible and learn. We get great feedback from guests. We get to learn things that they like, things that they don't like. And sometimes you get some really cool stories about what they went through and what they're up to. That's what the memories are created, and it's when it becomes more than a restaurant, because ultimately, like, yes, you can make any food at home. It's possible. You might not have access to a dishwasher at home, so it could be a little more difficult, but it's possible. What you cannot create is a restaurant memory at home. It's very difficult to do, because it's part of it's being in the environment. And that was something that I had to learn a lot. So it was learned very quickly, because I saw the cost associated with, you know, building out a counter, putting these chairs in. Previously, I'd be like, I'm just going to cook. You know, I don't really care about any of these things. I'll just get some plastic plates, put it on a plate, and if it tastes good, nothing's going to matter. I don't think it's the case anymore.
It is a bit more challenging, I think, to create that experience in my house. I've tried, it's hard to do. I know that the working day for chefs can be just massively long. I mean, can you walk me through, like, what's your, you know, when are you getting in and when are you getting out, and are you getting any sleep?
I think next year's year of sleep is what we agreed. So we have plans now for what's going on. As two restaurants, I didn't decide to open two because I didn't think it was going to be crazy. It was the exact opposite, as it was going to be an intense challenge. And so just when we're starting to, kind of gain some traction with one and feel like good about, hey, we have stability and schedule, we're getting all of our ingredients in, we can source things properly, we have methods down, we have recipes down to grams, we have costs starting to be figured out, we're finding, then we decided to open up a second one. And I think it's an interesting challenge because, what it creates is another moment for people to dine, a completely different experience, and also to see if what we can do matters. And it will be tough for me, for sure. But it's also tough for the staff. You know, we all want to do well. And we all want to carry the forth, being hospitable hosts, introducing some new things to Columbus, and trying to execute on a high level while still maintaining a smile. So that keeps me awake, I guess. It's not as much as like a stress of like, oh, it's a stress of failure. I mean, I failed in national television in my highs. Like, I was on a national television show. I was put on the bottom. They told me that I did a very bad job. And that's a very, very humbling moment. I don't really forget how that felt. After doing that, I just want to do as much as possible to contribute in a positive way. And at this point, is it the most healthy for my life? Right now, it's not. But my plan is not to maintain that or retain that or even encourage that. I realize that at a certain point, people are going to start looking at me in a different way and saying, hey, like, you know, you're also someone that maybe I look up to. And for me to be accepting of that, I have to be able to, love myself more, take care of myself, and do all of those things. You can never really make anyone else happy unless you're happy. So all of those things are kind of a work in progress. But for sure, for like from zero to two it's very difficult. I don't recommend it to anybody, but I wouldn't have learned unless I tried it. And the days can sometimes feel like they don't end. Sometimes they merge into one day. But what helps is having amazing people, having people support you in the community, having guests. And it's like, that's why I like Columbus so much, is because I'm very insecure and I have a lot of self-doubt. But every time I turn to the community, like, I expect that they're just going to, like, like when Ohio State loses, like, they're going to do that, but they don't. They say, hey, we're excited that you're here. And that's something that I can't really write down and be like, wow, I wonder if I deserve this.
Has it gotten easier for you to delegate, or are you kind of someone who needs to be hands-on and in control at all times?
I enjoy being hands-on. And that's, I think, maybe where I differ from others, is I don't get my hands on because I feel like I'm, like the king of the ship, and I have to be. It's more of, I get immense satisfaction from something as simple as flipping a burger. So on that, I always try and show people also as well, like, hey, like, it can be a lot of fun, that every time you do it, it's not going to be the exact same. There's some steps to the process. There's an element of mastery. There's a lot of joy in the steps. And sometimes, like, it's better to travel well than arrive. So I encourage that behavior a lot. Secondarily, I always learn from my staff. I learn better ways to do stuff. So if I try and have full control of the situation, there's so many techniques and so many efficiencies that I would not see. Like, I'm by no means an expert at coffee. I knew nothing at all about coffee other than that I drank it to stay awake, or attempt to anyway. And so we found some amazing people, like Robin Myers, we hired as our manager over there. He's been around the coffee scene for a long time. And within 2 days, I was like, wow, there's so much that I have yet to learn. So I have to actually trust people as part of my job every day. Growing up, we always had small family businesses, and a lot of them had people that were dishonest. Culturally, we were kind of always taught to like not trust anyone, always count the money. You shouldn't be doing these things. However, what I've learned in practice is if you empower someone to make a decision and you allow them to have accountability and you know, I'll let them do their thing, more often than not, they'll want to do the right thing. It's not such a bad place, you know, like we have this idea that things are going this way, but actually, I think even science backs that they've done like a study where they had someone pick up like a gift card, or they said like, here, flip a coin heads or tails, and they're on the other side of the phone. They said, hey, just tell me if it's heads or tails. If it's heads, you get a gift card. And people could easily lie and say heads, but people said, no, it was tails. Like, it was crazy to hear that even with no visibility, people would still make the right decision.
I'm left to ask one question as before I let you go. And it's with all of this, you know, the work you're doing and the way that you work and your approach to work, that is joyful and fulfilling. But also, I'm wondering what you're finding time for outside of that, or even in the midst of that, to kind of fulfill you or refill your cup, and send you back to the work renewed.
I think it's things like this where I never thought I would have a voice. You know, like I'm just a person. I didn't have like a great background growing up, becoming like a master chef or being really good at anything. I've just been me. So how did I get here? You know, like that's, and it's part of it is just doing the work and getting to get to know people and trying to do better, realizing that I don't know much. Sometimes in a day I can have some really good interactions with my staff. Sometimes I don't, but it's like, it always feels like the process itself is renewing in a way. Like if I didn't love it, if I didn't like what we could do to make people's days better, then I wouldn't do it. And the joy is honestly in spreading joy. Like how many career paths do you get where people come to you to seek a good time and you get to give it to them? Like, and not only that, but arguably restaurants are one of the beginnings of like civilization and society. Is like we all found a way to cook food together, to begin society, to farm together. So it can mean a lot more than just like a burger sometimes. And I love like just what I get to think about. Honestly, it's a privilege to be able to do that every single day. And it's not like I want to take lightly. It's one that I always want to get better at. And remembering it every now and then, it's just like that itself, like I don't need to necessarily drink coffee. It's that excites me. Like it's amazing what we can do through food, how I can learn about someone's culture through a traditional dish, how I can like make these connections and enjoy genuine laughs just over a meal. That is the stuff that it just gets me going all the time. Like I'm always excited. That's like I have an unlimited cup at that point when that happens. So
excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I love talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
The Last Ride, a deep dive into a shocking unsolved mystery.
These two young men disappear off the face of the earth, and the last person to see them live was this sheriff's deputy. His stories were so unbelievable.
Listen to the Last Ride podcast, part of the NPR network.
At the end of every episode, I take some time to share one of my small joys, and one that has been big for me is watching the NBA playoffs. You know, I'm a big basketball fan, and as thrilling as it is to me that I can kind of sink into my couch every evening and watch a couple hours of basketball, which I have all season, it's the stakes are different with the NBA playoffs. And the WNBA season also started this week, and that has been equally thrilling to me, as I am a big WNBA fan as well. I'm a big, big Connecticut Sun fan, because when I lived in Connecticut, I could not get into UConn women's games, because no one could get into UConn women's games if you didn't have tickets already, you know, and tickets were a hard get. But at the time, the Connecticut Sun were very bad, and they were playing in the casino, and you could get to those games significantly easier. So I'm a big Connecticut Sun fan, though. As far as a W goes, I end up going to Indiana Fever games every now and then, just because that's the only team that's like a day trip drive for me. And so I'm thrilled because the Fever have Aaliyah Boston, who was a player I loved watching in college, and now I get to go down and watch her in Indiana. But that colliding with this kind of crescendo of the NBA playoffs, which have been exciting. Right now, the conference finals are not that exciting. I'm kind of praying that they end soon so we can get to the finals and get to the heart of the thing. But it has been good to lose myself in sports. I'm an athlete. I played sports in high school and college. I'm a runner now. And I think that sports are kind of where I go to turn my brain off or turn my brain towards something different. And at the end of a day,
guaranteeing that I'll have a couple hours of ball to watch has been really great. And so that has been a real pleasure for me. You know, as someone who has a big heart for LeBron, at the time of recording this, the Lakers are down 0-3 and playing the Nuggets in game four tonight. And I'm hoping LeBron doesn't get swept. The Lakers are not going to win that series, I don't think. But I just hope he doesn't get swept. So maybe they'll pull out a win tonight. We'll see. I hope that you are finding some pleasure in the watching of something, or even just, you know, as the weather warms up, getting outside and maybe watching the sunset. We always have the best late spring, early summer sunsets here. So set your eyes on something that renews you, and that's the joy. Small Joys is a production of WOSU Public Media and part of the NPR Network. The show is produced and edited by Michael DeBonis, sound engineering by Eric French. Nick Hauser is the Chief Content Director of Digital Media. Thanks to Leticia Wiggins for editorial support, and thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate it on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We'll be back next week with more Small Joys.